Hello and welcome to the DJM Cloud podcast. This is episode number 27, recorded February 29th, 2012. I have a new intro audio, as you could hear at the beginning. Thanks to the paranoia about being labeled a conspiracy theorist of Dan Benjamin, we got this nice little audio clip off of 5x5.tv, the talk show number 80 was the podcast that audio was originally from. Sleeps on the floor. Now, after this break, we were going to talk about my book.
He listens to what's going on underground. Shit going down. He calls to his friends to get ready to fight. Not for the darkness, but for the light.
In the background, you hear the song by Niner, my band with Jessica. It's actually a song called Sleeps on the Floor, and it's a track that is being worked on for possible inclusion in our forthcoming Niner 2 album. I've been working on a book. The title that I've been working with that I think it'll come out with is Like Any Gangster, Selected Writings, 2006 to 2011. And the book takes excerpts of stuff that I've written and posted to the web. There's a few new bits of writing in there, and you know what, I actually thought about including correspondence, emails mainly, but I decided not to include that in this volume. And it's a very incomplete book. It's called Selected Writings. I don't know if that's the exact right way to put it. What I'm really trying to communicate is that it's just some excerpts, some articles put together for one book. It doesn't convey even the most important things that happened during that time. Like, for example, I got married in 2009 on September 6th of that year to my beautiful wife, Jessica. And there's a lot of stuff that I've done over that time that isn't really talked about thoroughly in the book. Now, the book has a slant of talking about literature, public affairs, sports, a little bit about music, and topics like that. And it has a lot of content that has a URL next to it and a link to a web page. I did also discuss the book on a previous podcast, and I talked about it Well, at that time, it was pretty far along, and it still is. But I still actually haven't finished writing the intro that I have been planning to put at the front of it, and then finish. I feel like I've looked at the copy, and I feel like the book is pretty much ready. So I think I really just want to make sure that I come up with something for the introduction that fits the book. The previous podcast that I talked about the book was podcast number 24. Now, if you want to see a link to the book, because it'll probably be out very soon. I was talking about, I was planning to release it in February of 2012, but I think maybe it'll be next month, so March, but it'll be out very soon. So if you want to see a link to the book, check the show notes. You can find the show notes at djmcloud.com, and then when we come back, we will cover the other stuff that I wanted to talk about, including some more discussion about Apple's Mountain Lion, a forthcoming version of OS X. You're listening to the djmcloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. Background, you're hearing Dance with the Dinosaur Screambird remix by Niner, also from the forthcoming Niner album, Niner 2. That album's already out, you can go to the Niner website and download it. Also, you can already download right now, as I record this podcast, the Niner 1 album. You can find that at blogs.sf3am.com/Niner, and you spell Niner, N-E-E-N-E-R. I've been working on recording some music in the last few months. I guess winter in Ohio affords some opportunities to do stuff inside. I was working on our new album. Jessica and I have been working on some new tracks, and yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about how Niner 2 is coming along. For the month of February, I decided to try to write 14 songs. I was inspired by this website that's called FAWM.org. Basically, it stands for February Album Writing Month, and people try to write, I guess because it was a leap year, 14 and a half songs, but I guess normally 14 songs in 28 days. And people share what they've written in a lot of cases and talk about it. Now, I didn't really go for signing up for a site like that. I know there's some other sites that do that type of thing, because I guess I'm very personal and private during the music writing process. I'm not against collaboration, and not, it's not unprecedented, but in terms of posting online in between working on songs, I decided to just kind of focus on writing songs, and I actually did write 14. Three of them are probably going to be used on Neener 2, especially the last one. I think all three of them are in very strong contention, though. And the last of those three, but those are really good songs. And so then I also wrote 11 more songs. And actually, out of those songs, a lot of them are short, and some of them are very good, I guess, I would say. But a few of them I like. I think it might make an okay EP of maybe three songs from those 11 remaining. So, and I think it was a very interesting exercise, and it kind of pushed me to the boundaries of my music recording abilities creatively. I made use of a range of different recording software. I used GarageBand from OS X, GarageBand 6, and that, I would say, was my number one primary tool. And I also used Logic Pro somewhat. I do like that a lot. I love its synthesizers. I love a lot of the stuff that it can do. I experimented with some other tools, though, other than those two core tools. I used a good deal of GarageBand for iOS. In my case, I used it for my iPhone 4S. I have used it on Jessica's iPad also, and that's very cool. But I like experimenting with music on my iPhone, whether it's using the MIDI instruments on that phone, or also using it to record guitars and vocals. It's very cool. I think there's an interesting difference between recording with Mac and with iOS. With iOS, it's very simple. The configuration is very direct and immediate. Like if you plug something in, you can expect it to be working as the audio tool. There's very little configuration. There's only one jack. You can plug a microphone or a headphone into that jack. You can also plug tools in that have both, like iPhone-ready headsets that have microphones built into them. I actually tried recording with one of those at one point, and I ended up bumping into the microphone a lot. So I did learn some things about, and some of them about stuff not to do. But I did like experimenting more widely with the GarageBand for iOS than I had previously. I also did do a little bit of digital audio workstation shenanigans with Reaper, which is a cross-platform digital audio program, and I definitely enjoyed some of its MIDI synthesizer tools, although I couldn't even figure out how to record with it, and I actually recorded with GarageBand and then exported the GarageBand file to Logic Studio, and then used Logic Studio's greater abilities to export the MIDI file and put that through Reaper, through their synth program. I also tried running guitars through Reaper's virtual amps, and I do think it's very cool, and I definitely am not very far up the learning curve with Reaper, but I'm interested in using it more now. So I definitely learned a good deal about recording. I don't know about songwriting. I tried. And I think that, Jessica and I are going to keep working on our music. The song you're hearing part of right now is Fly Away by Screambird. Screambird is my trance side project. You can find MP3 downloads and videos at screambird.djmcloud.com. And you can find MP3s of all the music that I've released at my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/djmcloud. The sound quality on the podcast has kind of been up and down. I feel like in the previous episode that the audio quality was not that high in parts, and there were factors in the recording that I just wasn't paying enough attention to. So it's on me. I'm definitely trying to maintain and, in fact, improve the sound quality on the podcast because I want it to be a decent listening experience. I actually did in a podcast, number 16 actually, talk about YouTube versus Vimeo. And in that episode, I came out, I would say, fairly strongly on the side of YouTube for a number of different reasons. YouTube has HD video, just like Vimeo does. YouTube has a lot of bandwidth, being owned by Google. It really seems to serve pretty quickly. YouTube allows iOS users to watch videos via HTML5. Vimeo, at the time that I recorded that, and I'm not sure if this is still true, I was under the impression from my experience that if the person that uploaded the video had a normal free account on Vimeo, then the video would probably not be viewable in iOS. The person that uploaded the video would have to have a premium account. And it seemed like that wasn't the case in a lot of situations. I thought there were some advantages maybe to Vimeo's community, but on the other hand, YouTube has a larger audience. And overall, I think that is the video site that has the attention, and it's the video site that has the bandwidth. Now, there's been a development in that space. Apple, who in iMovie had actually put support for YouTube in, is now going in the direction of supporting Vimeo. They're in OS X Mountain Lion appear to be some connections to Vimeo built directly in to Mountain Lion, the forthcoming version of OS X. We know that there's going to be a system-level Twitter login in Mountain Lion, similar to that system-level login for Twitter that's available in iOS 5. And I don't know if this is going to be the analogous type of situation for Vimeo, but it appears that whatever the exact shape, Apple is putting some support for Vimeo in Mountain Lion. I think that that's definitely something that could be a major factor. Apple popularized home video editing, I think, to a large extent, and I think that programs like iMovie and GarageBand create a market for consumer and prosumer users that gravitate toward Apple machines for creative reasons. And I think that the amount of videos made with the average Mac might be fairly high compared to made with Windows or Linux machines. I don't know specifically. I would just say anecdotally from that would make sense to me. But I don't know if that's true statistically. But I do think that Vimeo may grow a good deal because of this login, and maybe I'm even taking a second look at my Vimeo account. If you want to take a second look at my Vimeo account or YouTube account, you can see the links to them at the show notes at djmcloud.com, and just look for Podcast 27. That post will have the links in it. There's one more story that I was going to mention, and it is the PS Vita. Sony has released its new portable PlayStation gaming system, and it is actually called the PS Vita, not the PSP2, but it's a successor to the PSP, and I had been paying attention to rumors, many of which were quite off base, but Sony had announced the PS Vita last year, and the system has a PlayStation style control buttons on the left and right, but it has a left analog stick and a right analog stick. And it also has a touch screen, and it appears to also have a back screen that actually has touch sensitivity, as well as right and left trigger buttons. So this system, while adding a touch screen, I think is very key. It also is from what I saw, because I was actually able to look at one because my brother Jim had one that he had just gotten that I saw last weekend. I think it's very impressive hardware. It definitely has an impressive level of quality and industrial design. I was very impressed with the design and the look and feel of it. The buttons were really small. It had a there were some slight differences from the way from just a simplistic evolution from the PSP. But I think it was it really seems to make sense for a portable system. And I think the web browsing experience was pretty good, because I also, along with briefly looking at a game, it was this tennis game my brother had. I also looked at the web browser, and I downloaded an MP3 off a website, and it was definitely, just to see if, like, you know, you could download a podcast and listen to it. And I got pretty far along with it. It downloaded the MP3, and I was, like, looking around the web, and then actually my brother started using it again, because I briefly put it down and looked away. So it's a very cool new piece of hardware. I don't know if there's enough of a market for this type of device in a market where so many people are buying nice smartphones that have large touch screens. And whether you're looking at iOS or Android, there's a very active gaming market in both of those, on both of those platforms. And as far as I know, there's a lot of backing behind the Windows Mobile platform, from Windows 7 or Windows 8 or whatever. And so I think there could be that too, really competing with this type of device. But you do get a very nice piece of hardware for $250 US is what I saw it for, but or $300 if you get it with the cellular chip in it. Now I'm not really sure that that's necessary, but I mean, that does seem to compare roughly with, say, the cost of an iPhone in the US, and that's when you get the iPhone on a contract. So I think that it is a nice, compelling piece of hardware. Maybe they sell it to people who want to spend the money on a nice portable gaming system, and maybe get the more basic phone, the phone that's free with the plan. Of course, that's the substantial cost, and that doesn't really make sense to do. And also, maybe they're hoping to just sell it to gadget hounds, people that really like those types of devices. I think it is an elegant device, and I was very impressed with it. Well, thanks for listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast, episode number 27.